that we had was Do I Matter? So this will be Do I Matter Part 2. And we talked about it being one of the biggest anxieties in people. Do I matter? And what people try to do to have significance. I think, in my mind, you can see that all over the place up here, even on the religious side. You know, but it's a huge anxiety. I mean, people's, you know, they try to matter. I mean, I've watched people work for 50 years and retire and die in a month because they feel that job was my work. It was where I mattered. It was where I was important. And when I lost being important, you know, the old saying, no reason to live. If I don't matter, there's no reason to live. There's no reason for me to exist. So and this comes up in, you know, depression. Why people do what they do. And I think everybody has experienced this in some way, shape, or form. I tell you, I think one of the biggest parts when people feel this is those teenage years, you know. There's a transition. There's a transition going from, you know, I watch little kids. They don't think nothing of running over and jumping up on mommy and daddy's lap. You know, just no matter what, you know, mommy will stop whatever she's doing, pick the baby up, whatever. But then there comes that separation where, you know, finally it's like, you're too big for me to hold anymore. I can't hold you. You're breaking my back. Get off me, you know. So then there comes that time, and you know, you get all that emotional stuff going on in teenage years anyway. And then so people are looking for relationships, looking for everything. Do I matter? Do I matter? Am I significant? Am I important? So they do everything they can to try to feel that. And that's why I want to go and look at this, just a couple scriptures here from Psalms. And look at this, because this is not something new, but I want us to look in Psalm 8. And I'm going to start in verse 3. When this was even quoted in the New Testament, listen to what David says. This is a Psalm of David. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained. What is man that thou art mindful of him? The son of man that thou visitest him. This is David on a clear night. And I don't know about you, but I love to go out on a clear night. Bad thing about it is the clear nights happen in the wintertime, when it's blue cold. But looking up at the stars and the moon and the vastness, and plus at this time the world wasn't polluted. You could see the Milky Way. You could see those things. And David looking up and feeling his insignificance, his smallness. And he asked this question, what is man that thou art mindful of him? That word there, that thou art mindful, that you take thought of him. That thou visitest him. That word visited, in other translations it says that thou carest for him. What is man that you think of him and that you care for him? I mean, this is David in his smallness asking these questions. And the word here for man is not Adam, all dumb, as you know, the Hebrew word. It's Enosh. Not Enoch, Enosh. And it means man in his weak, frail mortality. He's speaking of our true mortality here. I mean, he's in this night and he's looking at the stars and he's saying, look at me, I'm so weak. I mean, what am I? I mean, you can look at the animals and, I mean, look at the deer, how he can gracefully run and jump. And, you know, David, you know, he talked about the heart. Look at the rhinoceros, and he's like a tank in his strength. And the lion, how he goes, look at me. I fall down, I might break my neck. I'm done. I'm so weak, I can't see like they can. I can't fly, I can't swim. What is man? That thou carest for him, that thou is mindful of him. But yet, in all of God's creation, we are the only creatures that God created that, for one, can consider our own selves. You know, monkeys don't sit around and consider their own selves. And they don't sit around and look at the constellations and the stars. And I know these things seem insignificant, but if we could understand this, we could... I mean, a monkey can't build a road. A monkey can't build a house. You know what I mean? A monkey can't come up with an antibiotic. You know what I'm saying? These things are... Only a creature in the image of God can do these things. And we're the only creatures that can ask the Creator questions. And receive answers to those questions. I mean, this really is amazing. I can remember this dear little sister. Man, she was just something else. So one of her sons committed suicide. Lived right below her, committed suicide. She was devastated. Church lady, been to church later a whole lot. Sister Vivian Blankenship was her name. She was devastated. And I remember sitting there crying, and she said, I would love to know why God took my son. You know? And then come up with this and say, well, I know that we're not allowed to ask God any questions. And I thought, who could bear this burden? I mean, sometimes asking questions is, we got such a great burden on us that we got to get this burden off, and it comes off in the form of a question. But yet God says, you cannot question me. I got it in my phone right now where I was told. We do not question God. Some things can just be received and contorted and brought through the lie, and just now you're meant to bear that burden, you know, from now on. What is man? I mean, is this not a question in itself? God, what is man? What am I that you even consider me, that you care for me? Who am I? Look at me. I'm not mighty and valor and strength. I'm a little weak creature that can't kill an alligator, can't catch a squirrel. You know, they taunt me, they run around me, and I have to build some kind of contraption. I can't run a rabbit down. man, that you take thought for him, that you're mindful of him. Now this is David. Now we got to hear what David is saying. This is David. He's feeling his smallness, but yet David's mind is not on judgment. He's not saying, oh God, I know I'm so weak and I'm so un-this and un-that. Surely thou must judge me and have to, you know. He's not feeling that. But what's on David's mind here is the possibility of being overlooked. The possibility of really not mattering to God. You see what I'm talking about here? He's so small. But it is saying here, he's saying, how is it possible, God, that you don't overlook me? You see what I'm saying? He's not coming at the point was, oh God, I'm scared you're going to overlook me. He's saying, how is it that you don't overlook me? How is it possible that I can ever matter to you? What's on my mind, God, really is that you would take thought, that you would even be mindful of me. My mind is, gosh, I figured you're so busy doing this and doing that and running everything else. How in this world could you not overlook me? How could you be mindful of me? How could you care for me? How could you even know that I'm here? Did I slip in unannounced? It's the great fear of the people today, isn't it? Do I matter? Does anyone care if I really live or die? Isn't that what people feel and react to today? Listen, guys, I know a preacher that's been preaching for years and years and years. Tell me, with tears in his eyes, he's afraid he would die having made no impact, no significance, no matter. You see what I mean? Just afraid it was going to slip away as if his life is meaningless if he doesn't get this done. But if all odds are against him in getting it done, then his life will have been as all the great words that we use, vanity and vexation of spirit. I mean, they say if I died, would anyone really even notice, except for my close family, you know, just. People lose a job. People retire. They go into this state of depression because when they were there, people depended on what they did and what they made and what they. People were thankful for them. But now, it's gone. They've lost it. They feel like they're in a vacuum. Now they say, do I matter? Is there any worth left in me? I was useful here. You know? How many times have you seen people? They're useful in this situation. They think they are. But then all of a sudden, maybe a car wreck, something happens, they become crippled. But they can't do that anymore. They feel useless and they go over here and commit suicide in some way or another. I mean, this happens. People do this in life. Maybe they don't even have to be crippled by arms or legs, but in their minds, they're crippled. And if they're crippled, they feel useless and worthless. Do I even matter? I mean, this really takes place in people. You know, the thing, we talk about worth and self and all these other things. I mean, people come around and they say, I lost my home. Now, these things, and I know the anxiety of this because I've lost before. And see, I used to have a name. I was the guy who owned that house. And now I'm the guy who lost that house. Do you see what I mean? I had some worth before. You know, today's society, we call it a portfolio, right? It's your worth. It's your history. It's your present. It's your future. How much have we gathered all your assets are you worth? My portfolio was not near as big as yours, so I'm not worth much. Right? All those things to try to give us worth. Didn't feel useless. I mean, if I don't even show up for work, I feel useless. I knew this guy. One time, I've known him for a long time. He showed me a lot of stuff on the railroad, 29 years. He worked on the railroad, was a big boss. We were putting in this big electronic system and it failed. And you know, somebody's got to take the fall. The fall landed on him. And he stepped up like a man to take the fall. My fault. Behind the scenes, they didn't fire him, but they said, "We'll accept your resignation. You need to depart." And it wasn't a month later that we had a big cookout. You know how a celebration, you know, because we'd got the new system in and we were celebrating and all of this other stuff. And he showed up. And he showed up in tears. And I can remember him sitting there. Here's a guy, you know, I'm a young man. Here's a guy that's 29 years service. He's in his 60s. And the guy I had the utmost respect for sitting there crying because now he feels worthless. He had worth, now worthless. And it was devastating. It was devastating. A child feel abandoned, maybe by divorce, maybe by death. Children think you didn't love me enough to stay. You didn't love me enough to get well. You abandoned me. I mean, these things arise in the child's mind. Even so much so that children will say, "What did I do to make mom and daddy divorce? I'll do this if you'll stay together." Obviously, I wasn't cared enough for, you see what I mean? I wasn't cared enough for y'all to stay together. So, I mean, you see the seeds of this "do I matter" starting to grow from little old children right here. Growing up into this world thinking, "I don't even matter. I don't even matter in my family." I mean, the little kid said, "I tried so hard." And you think about this because here comes the little kid. The little kid is saying, "Well, look, maybe I didn't keep my room clean enough. Maybe I didn't do the dishes enough. Maybe I didn't do this enough." And so then this kind of personality grows up, and it, you know, comes them all them other words that they use for people and trying to find perfection and doing all this other, because it stems from a point of view. I'm not worth it. I don't really matter. So I've got to do this to compensate. Those little things will control the rest of your life. It's a driving force, driving question: do I matter? So much so that I have to find people who care for me that I matter. Right? I've got to find my circle of friends. I mean, that's why kids join gangs, isn't it? It's easy to see, but it's also why adults join clubs. "I don't matter" until I became a Kiwanis. You know? "I didn't matter" until I become one of the Masons, you know? And now I've got to join something so that I can matter. I had no say in this I had no say on the railroad until I became part of the union. And we call it a brotherhood. It's not a brotherhood. It's a pay your dues. You know what I'm talking about. But it comes off and people, oh, I matter because I'm part of the union. So I'm in this big circle. But now if Tim's not in my union, I don't care about Tim. Because I'm in this union, we're a brotherhood. And Tim's over here. You see what I mean? So I must join something where I matter. People go to mega churches. People go to churches, for that matter, so that they can somehow authenticate their very being, their very existence. I have a right to be alive. Why do you have a right to be alive? Because I'm serving God. Isn't this the big term in the church? Serving God. Got to serve Him. Got to serve Him. My life had no meaning. I did not matter, but now it matters because I'm serving God. Now, there is kind of a word here that we're going to look at in this thing, mindful respect. We'll get back to that word here in a minute. Respect. But I know people, I could give you an example, I won't for tape purposes, but I know people who fill their houses with cats and dogs and all kinds of animals because they feel nobody thinks that I matter. But when I feed the cats, I matter. You know what I mean? It drives people to money. If I have more money, a bigger portfolio, I will matter more. And as I said earlier, this is David here. He's making a positive statement. He's saying, this frail man, what is it that you take thought of him, that you care for him? I'm Enosh, weak and frail mortal, but you are mindful of me. You care. I mean, this is not David worried about being lost. This is David thinking, I'm amazed that you care for me. That you are mindful of me. So what does this word mindful mean? Mindful. It means to impress the memory. When I'm talking impress, you know what I'm talking about. I'm thinking of a press and a die. Like when I'm putting a piece of copper in there and I'm stamping it down there and I'm impressing an image in there. You see what I mean? David's image. I'm impressed. It means something or somebody that you just can't get out of your mind. It means to remember. And remember, you know what remember means. This is not like kind of pull up a past thought of something that happened 15 years ago. This is just what we did. Remember. The Hebrew word for remember is not a recollection. It means that which you remember is immediately present to you. Immediately present. Remember how we discussed that? The Holy Spirit would make this immediately present to you. And make you immediately present to Him. It means you're involved in that which you remember. Why are you involved? Because it's immediately present. The word mindful means to think about. It means your mind is full of that person. Sounds like somebody in love, don't it? Can't get out of my mind. That's what David is saying here. It also means to make a mark in order to recognize. In other words, you put up a plaque. Okay? Have you seen those plaques? This is so-and-so. And when everybody comes in, who's, you know, boom, there's a plaque. There's a memorial. There's a commemoration. Put up a plaque. We've got it out here at Mount Rushmore, etched in stone. You set up a memorial so that they can't be forgotten. All this is in this word, mindful. It means to pay attention to commemorate, to proclaim. To proclaim the person that fills your mind. Now remember, David is asking, what is man that God, you have, this is your thoughts towards me. I want you to remember this direction here. God, you've impressed your memory with me. You can't get me out of your mind. It means that you remember. It means that I'm immediately present with you, God. Not you're present with me. I'm always present with you. Because most of the time, God ain't present with me because I ain't paying him no attention. I'm doing this, doing that. But I'm always present with him. He set up a plaque, a commemorative, a memorial, etched in stone. It means this person is of such worth, I can never let them out of my mind. Now the English word here that's very close to this Hebrew word, mindful, is the word respect. Now we see this two-part word here, re and spect. Now we know re means again. And spect is the word we get our spectacles. It's a vision word. It means to see. It means to look at. Respect means to take a second look. It means to look again. It means to take notice and it means to pay special attention to. You regard with a certain kind of awe, with a certain kind of honor. Respect. What is man that thou art mindful of him? What is man that thou respectful, that thou is respectful of him? The son of man that thou carest for him. I mean, what is this weak, frail Enosh that you notice him? Why do you even bother with us? David is saying, as I look up into this vast, awesome universe, I feel so small, yet I am impressed upon your mind. You hold me ever before you. You can never forget me. David is the one that says, if I take the wings of the morning, fly to the othermost parts of the sea, the Lord is there. You're ever thinking, your every thought is about me. You've made a plaque, a commemorative statement about me. I mean, just let me read you the scripture of God's commemorative statement. I got two verses here. In Isaiah 22, verse 23, I will fasten him as a nail in a sure place, and he shall be for a glorious throne to his father's house. A nail in a sure place. A commemorative. I mean, he stuck a nail in some place, a commemorative, you know, that's what we do. We can put a picture up on the wall or something. We're going to put a nail there and hang this plaque up on this nail. Isaiah 49 says, behold, I have graven thee upon the palms of my hands. Thy walls are continually before me. We were engraved in the nail prints in the hands of Jesus. When Jesus, I mean, he was beat beyond recognition. When he rose from the dead, all the wounds were gone except the nail prints in his hands and the spear in his side. You've been engraved. A commemorative has been set up. This is how much I love you right here. This is how much you matter to me right here. That's the commemorative seal. You're marked in the palms of his hands. The Father's ever taking notice of us. The Holy Spirit is always there. Why? To do you good. To give you guidance. To pick you up when you fall. Lives in you. Yes, we matter. We matter to God. But that brings us to the question, why does he do all that? Because God is love. Love is why. So we're back to the person of God here in this thing. Because without love, there's no respect. Right? Mindful, respect. Without love, there's no respect. A person that believes they are unloved has lost all sense of worth and feels what? Totally disrespected. And when we're talking about mattering and respect, we're going back to who God is. And you know, God is love, and it's that agape love. God created man in order to bestow his love upon us. He loves us. Why? Because that's who he is. And that love is a gift that actually transforms us. You know, all these words, transformed by the renewing of your mind, and all these things, they sound to me, when I read some of those things, I think they sound like I'm dealing with an attorney. You know, the language that they use. Instead of just, you know, like John was just simple in his approach to the thing, because John wasn't a scholar guy, he was a fisherman. He said, hey, God's love. And Paul says, be ye changed, you know, by the transforming, by the renewing of your mind. And that's just simple love. I mean, that's what the thing is. When we open to his love, we're transformed. We read that right there in 2 Corinthians, 4:3? Chapter 2 Corinthians 3, when he says there's no more veil in Christ. There's no more separation. The only veil, he says, now is in you. You won't open up to receive it. He's received you. He's pursuing you. All you need to do is just receive him. Religion says if you do this and don't do that, so God can love you. Agape says we were created to be loved. That's my reason for being, is to be filled with love. To be filled with the person of love in Jesus Christ himself. To be drawn by that love to the goal of being. And what is our goal of being? To be in the family of God. Beloved, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us that now we are what? We're in the family. I mean, you ever think about God's first dealing with man? I mean, we think these things took place in a short notice. I mean, there's only a few verses right here, but he makes man out of the dust of the ground. And I can see his first act here. Just get this and you can read it. His first act was to set Adam down by his side, his little son, while he built a garden.
There's Adam watching him make this magnificent garden. It's called the Garden of Delight, the Garden of Eden. Adam is, his kids is with him, and he's like, hey, watch this. Looky here. Then he takes that man and puts him in the garden. He let his child play in the garden. The child's playing and learning about trees and plants and animals and all these things. He's playing and running in the garden. He's learning biology 101. Then he takes the man and puts him to sleep and takes out of his side a woman. She's taken out of Adam. Adam says, she's bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. He calls her Isha. You looked up that word. Adam said he was Ish. And this woman had come out as Isha. Because we're the same, yet we're different, yet we're the same. We're equal. Ish and Isha. And they hold each other in respect. So God who created us now makes two equal creatures sharing the same humanity. That's what they were equal in. They were both humans. They were sharing the same humanity. That they should be thoughtful, that they should respect each other, holding each other in honor. We even say that in our wedding vows, don't we? Look at this verse in Psalm verse 5. For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, crowned him with glory and with honor. Do you realize that the King James, the translators were scared of this verse? Because the word angels is the word Elohim. Do you realize the word Elohim is the word for God? They were afraid to use that word, so they put in the word angels. He didn't make us a little lower than the angels. He made us a little lower than God himself. That's why back in Genesis it says, made in the image, made in the likeness of God. That word image, you know, and others have talked about this. The word image there means the shadow or the outline. It means if you see the shadow, you recognize the shadow is coming right off of the source. Right? It's attached to the source. You can't separate shadow and source. It's the very outline of it. It means it's one who represents and declares another. And the word likeness here, it's the word representative. And it's the representative that bears the authority of the one he represents. And you know, I'm just thinking of the centurion. The one who was under authority. We and our creation were fitted to be a part of God's family. But we know something happened, something totally foreign, something alien came in to agape love, to honor and respect. A love that was, now listen to what I'm telling you. I mean, we would recognize something big and grotesque, wouldn't we? We would recognize that. But this was a love that was birthed out of the lie. I said a love that was birthed out of the lie. Looks like love. It's called Eros love. Now it says, and I hear Jesus say that, look, the sinners do that. You remember when he was talking about love your enemies? He said, if you love those that love you back, heck, the sinners do that. You know, I mean, that's easy. That's Eros love. Because Eros love says, I love you and I respect you because you're the best. You're the highest. You're the most beautiful. I want you for my pleasure because you please me. Agape love says, I love you because that's who I am. And I bestow that love upon you as a gift, and I draw you with that love into my heart. Again, Eros says, I love you because you're the highest, you're the best. It's the love that we see in the world today. It's fickle.
here today, gone tomorrow. The person being loved is only loved and respected because they're the best at that moment. It only has respect while it's pleasing you. The arrows can drop you like a hot rock. It does not respect the person for who they are, but for what they do and how much pleasure they bring me. That's what Eros does. Eros is not safe. There's one of the scriptures that talks about the safety of God. Eros love is not safe. Because you could be beautiful this moment and the next moment you're not. It's not safe. It'll turn on the one that it loved a moment ago. Eros is incapable of respecting all persons. It only loves and respects those that it counts as the highest and the best and the most beautiful. And we know that that's all drawn from the eyes of the beholder. Eros draws circles. It says inside the circle, you're like me. If I let you in this circle, you're like me and you please me. And I accept you. But if you stop being like me, then you're out of my circle. You know what that is? That's called racism. And that's in every form of society. It doesn't have to be black or white. It is in everything. We had our own brand of racism in school growing up. We called them preppies. We called them rednecks. We called them hippies. We called them whatever. I'm going to tell you another word that Eros is in this thing. It's denominationalism. It means if you go to church and you act like me, you can be part of my church. But as soon as you don't, you're outside of my circle. That's Eros love. Oh, I'm so glad that you're in here doing this and doing this, but you do something different, you're out of here. It's all birthed out of the lie. Now, with this Eros love, can you now begin to see why they view God as one who must punish, a God who must judge, a God who must give you cancer, because it's birthed out of this Eros love. God only loves me when I'm the best. And if I'm not the best, must be punished for it. If you're not in my circle, you're not respected. You're ugly and you're below our standard. So really and truly, Eros love only respects itself. Now we're back to self again. Now there's a word that we've added on. It was a word in itself. It was an old word. It was actually used to describe Satan. And it's the word dis. And it meant to curse something. It meant to destroy it. So we put those two words together and we have the word disrespect. You see what I mean? We've destroyed it. We've took respect and made it a curse and destroyed it. The thing that was given between Ish and Ishah has now been infiltrated with Eros love to become disrespect. Came in the fall. And in that fall, when respect and thought for one another, it was blown up, it was destroyed. Cursed, the scripture says. And if you look at this real close and just look, what was in the words of the lie was Eve, you and Adam, you don't really have the respect that you deserve. You really don't have the honor and worth that's yours. You're really God's. So what you need to do is declare your independence. But then you'll be respected for who you are. You'll have earned it. And they didn't become gods. They become less than human. They become less than what they were created to be. They become the darkness. They become one with the light.
And in that, they lost all respect for each other. Then they believed something was missing. And that brings us back to the question, do I matter? What do I have to do in order to matter? What do I have to do in order to matter to God? What do I have to do in order to matter to you? Even people who don't appreciate a God still feel this burning question in them. I must do something to matter. How can I get into your circle of acceptance? I feel something's wrong with me. That's why people go out and they call it fashions, because if I wear these old clothes, I won't fit in. I must get in this kind of fashion so I'll be accepted, because when I walk around, everybody at once say, look, they don't dress like we do. They're not in our circle. Disrespect. So then I just feel like something's the matter with me. Through the eyes of the lie, the lens of the lie sees God as Eros God. That's through the lens. That's the way God is seen. Oh, he's love. But it's not agape. It's Eros love. The lie says God is not agape. He's Eros. He is love, but he only loves the best people. He only loves those with excellent behavior. God draws his circle. Haven't we seen, even heard it preached about God? There, you know, broad is the way. Narrow is the gate. Few there be. God's circle's getting smaller and smaller. Heard a guy yelling and hollering this morning on the radio saying, if you got one sin in your life, you can't go to heaven. And you better straighten up, because hell has enlarged itself. And if you got one sin, think one bad thought, you better get right, because yelling and screaming and beating and banging. I guess he's sinless. You know, that was my only conclusion, was he must be sinless. It's through the eyes of Eros. Because when you really begin to see you, then you say, well, I know God could never love me, because I'm not. I know that I messed up. I walked away. No way, if this is God, could he love me? If God is Eros, then I really don't matter. So what do? We hid ourselves from God in the trees and whatever. We hid ourselves from the terror of God. The very thing that the great masters tell me all the time, Brother Jimmy, it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. There's no more sacrifice. We said willfully, there's no more sacrifice, brother. It's pay as you go. God will kill your kids. I mean, yesterday we're dancing in the garden with God. We're having a party in the garden. He showed me about raccoons and alligators. Today he's Eros love, and I'm hiding in the bushes, waiting to be judged. We failed. I must hide. He's the God now of judgment. He's not the God of agape. You see, so now can you see where everything is viewed through the lens of Eros? We went out of the garden. We went out because we were all in Adam. We all went out believing we could never gain God's respect again. Then after we got over that part, we began to demand respect. We began to demand respect from others. The man says, I will matter to God. People labored and sweating and doing and trying to find the ultimate something to do, the ultimate position to hold. in order to matter, in order to gain respect. We've got to matter. It's in us. And I really mean it's in us. Why? Because God created, we were created by an agape God who says, I refuse to be God without you. Until we come back to that agape love, we will always be looking for it. It's the great vacuum. And right into this Eros world. Eros world. Comes the son of agape himself, named Jesus. And what did he do? He became one with us. You remember agape, that agape bestows respect. Agape gives itself freely. I hadn't even thought about this, but do you realize that when he came here, that he gave us a name? I mean, we know the name Precious, but do you realize what a great worth it is to be called lost? I mean, if you really think about it, when he bestowed upon you the word lost, that means you're worth something. Because you don't lose nothing that ain't worth nothing. You know what I mean? I mean, I have lost some things in my house that is really worth something, that we stop all movement until we find it. And I've lost some things that ain't really, you can't even use the word lost because they're so insignificant. If it rolled under the bed, I wouldn't go fetch it. You know what I mean? Because it ain't worth anything. So when he bestows the word lost upon you, he in itself is telling you what you're worth. He says, I can't rest until I found it. I've got a sheep that was lost, and I can't rest until I get that sheep. I love that parable. You know, I'm going to be stuck on that parable for the next 20 years, but that's all right. You ever wonder why that he goes after the sheep? Now, if this was Eros love, then that sheep down there would have must have been the best sheep for him to go after. But we know this wasn't the best sheep. Matter of fact, this was the stupidest sheep, because this sheep was so stupid, he got lost. It was the most disrespectful, disobedient sheep. No way Eros love would go get that sheep. But right in the middle of this, agape love says, this is how precious this sheep is. And I must go get it. And as a matter of fact, my family is not complete without. See, I could just say I got a family of 99. But my family is incomplete until I go get this one. It's how much worth it has. The shepherd says the sheep matters so much that I will leave the place where I am. I will leave the safety of where I am and go into that place of lostness where that sheep is to bring it back. And you know, right after that, here we go to the prodigal. The prodigal. He lost respect for himself. I mean, he ate with the pigs. I was looking at the verse today in Luke 15 and 19. He said, I'm not worthy. He has asked this very question, do I matter? And he's concluded from all the circumstances, if God is Eros love, then I must conclude that I am not worthy. I mean, Dad can tell you this is what we had to say from the pulpit every time. We had to conclude, I'm not worthy. I really do not matter. And just God, by some happenstance in his, he was merciful today. See, that's how Nero operated, you know, the emperor of Rome. One day if he felt good, he staged your execution. If he felt bad, he'd dipped you in oil and set you on fire. Eros love. Religion has dipped itself in Eros love and believed the lie. And this prodigal son here, who seen his own actions, says, God, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy to be one of the hired servants. I've judged it. I don't matter. You know the story. The father loved him and declared him to be the son, robed him with his best robe, killed the fatted calf, and this is my son who was lost, changed his condition from a lost son to a found son, from a dead son to a live son. Still part of the family.
Yes.
You see what I'm talking about. And then, I mean, people say, look at this verse right here. He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? How about this verse here in Acts, Acts 20 and 28? Take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock over which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers, to feed the church of God. Feed them. I always wonder, feed the sheep, feed the sheep, feed the lamb, feed the lamb, feed the sheep. What do you feed them? This is what you feed them with. I mean, it's the bread of life. This is my body which was broken for you. This is the cup which I bless, the cup of the new. What do you eat? I mean, you got to have bread and wine. That's what you feed them with. It's the love of God in the person of Jesus Christ. Take heed that you feed the church. Well, how much did the church cost? Which he hath purchased with his own blood. You have been bought with the very blood of God. Now, my goodness gracious, how much are you worth now? I mean, you are the temple, the very dwelling place of the living God. The holy family of agape, the Holy Spirit has pursued us, even in all the times that we've walked away and that we've run and we've not paid any attention. He's ever drawn us. Never forcing himself on us. Bringing us into his family. Transforming us. When we know this, when we begin to get a hold of this, that we are honored and respected and thought of, then we begin to respect ourselves. Then we begin to realize, I myself was bought. And we see how futile the words were. Do I matter? And see, we get in our pity party. I think of Elijah and his pity party. That's what I always say when he was in the cave. Oh, there's nobody else. Oh, the only one. Oh, God. What are you doing in there, Elijah? Why are you having a pity party? Don't you know what you're worth? Don't you know that I'm always thankful? You're impressed. Look, I mean, you know, he couldn't to Elijah say that, but to us he could say, look. Don't matter. Look. Not worth anything. Look. Thomas, look. Go ahead, put your finger in there. But we began to see that and began to see that I am worth it. It changes how we see others. No more circles. You began to see that they were bought with the same blood as you and I were. You could never disrespect them. You might not agree with them. You might not want to live with them. You might not like what they're doing, but you could never disrespect them. You see, disrespect. You could never stop praying for them. You could never stop looking for avenues to bestow God's love upon them. So that brings us to this, and I'm going to quit right here. We can't love without first knowing we are loved of God. Now can you see why he can make that statement?
Now, let me just go there here real quick. 1 John 4:19. We love him. Why? Because he first loved us. We could say it this way. We respect because he first respected us. And that respect goes over into every avenue of our lives. And trying to love without knowing you are loved of God and how much you're worth, it's toxic love. And when I say this respect goes into every avenue of life, I'm saying even in our driving, road rage and all the other things. You know what I'm talking about. Even in our going to the store, dealing with rude and ugly people. When we know how much we're worth and how much we were purchased by, the same thing for them. They just don't know it. So then that love and respect begins to flow. All right, I went over my time.